When the Pharisees, with some scribes who had come from Jerusalem, gathered around Jesus, they observed that some of his disciples ate their meals with unclean hands, that is, unwashed hands. For the Pharisees, and in fact all Jews, do not eat without carefully washing their hands, keeping the traditions of the elders. And on coming from the marketplace, they do not eat without purifying themselves. And there are many other things that they have traditionally observed, the purification of cups and jugs and kettles and beds. So the Pharisees and the scribes questioned him, "Why do your disciples not follow the traditions of the elders, but instead eat a meal with unclean hands?" He responded, "Well did Isaiah prophesy about you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines human precepts.' You disregard God's command, but cling to human tradition." He summoned the crowd again and said to them, "Hear me, all of you, and understand. Nothing that enters one from outside can defile that person, but the things that come out from within are what defile. From within people, from their hearts, come evil thoughts, unchastity, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, licentiousness, envy, blasphemy, arrogance, folly. All these evils come from within, and they defile." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. I'm looking over to my shoulder to check to see if you can still see, as the light goes down, as the sun goes down, what's written underneath the cross. It says, "Watch and pray." Watch and pray. I don't know, maybe you've come in here hundreds of times and didn't realize that that's up there, but it is. Hopefully I'll get to do a little more research to find out who was the one that had the inspiration to put that phrase of all phrases there. It's from Gospel of Matthew. And I'm guessing maybe it was with the rebuilding of the cathedral, of the building here, back in the 1860s after it had been burned by a fire. But it's quite a unique phrase to put there. Watch and pray. Maybe you could put something like, I don't know, something from St. Patrick's breastplate, or something like from that hymn, something that's more apropos to St. Patrick. This is St. Patrick's Cathedral, the Irish, or maybe the Italians, which were up and coming at the time. But, or maybe something like, I don't know, "Love one another as I have loved you." Something that makes us feel nice and warm inside and fuzzy and like, yeah, Jesus, he's the best, and something like that. But it's watch and pray, and those are words from Jesus. And he says them to the disciples, the special three that he pulled aside in the Garden of Gethsemane, as he's praying, he's about to go undergo the worst, and he's looking for support from his followers, the ones he's poured everything into. And he goes back to him, he's praying to the Father, "Please let this cup pass me by." Goes back, they're sleeping. He wakes them up and says, watch and pray, lest you fall into temptation, is how the rest of the phrase goes. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Okay, now for however many hundred years, that's been up there, like for all of us to like think about a lot. Watch and pray, lest you fall into temptation. What a message for New York City. And I think it ties right into the gospel that we just read. Now, what I want to focus on is this part towards at the end of it, not so much the hypocrisy of the scribes and Pharisees, but this thing where the Lord, he's calling everyone together. "Hey, everybody, come here. What really makes you messed up is coming out from the inside, not coming in from the outside. Your sin, if it's really sin, that means something you've decided on, something that you committed your will to at some level. Sure, there's extenuating circumstances. Yes, there are influences from the outside. But the things that really darken your soul are coming out from within. They're, in certain sense, latent in there. And if you let them, they will come out, and then they become sin. It's a tendency that we have. Now, we know by baptism we have God's sanctifying grace in our soul. So it's not like we are automatically a big sinner always, and it's just sins coming out that they're just already in there. No, it's when we make a decision that we're going to go along with this temptation that's been presented to us. And that's you doing it. That's what makes it sin. If it's not you doing it, then it's not sin. It's something else. So maybe it's a psychosis or something. It can be. But we have a technical term for this. It's called, in the church, it's called concupiscence. This natural inclination that we all have, every one of us except that lady right there in Jesus, to sin. It's almost like when it comes to standing solid in the faith, we're all just like a little off balance. And depending on how much we've kind of gone along with that, maybe we're even more than a little bit off balance. It's this inclination towards sin that our will doesn't always fire straight away at doing, okay, I'm going to do what's good. It's like, oh, shoot, I didn't. I just fell off. I just did this other thing that I knew I should. Why did I do this? It's so stupid. And I keep doing it. And of course, then we beat ourselves up. And that's exactly what the devil wants you to do. He wants you to get really down on yourself. But we have a guarantee from God. And if there's some one thing that you're going to take away from this homily here, this is what I want it to be, or hope it will be. Anytime that we're facing a particular temptation, a concrete situation right in front of us, we have a guarantee from God that you will always have the strength to beat that temptation that's in front of you. Always. And I say that not so much like looking backwards as like, and look how many times you didn't do it. No, I'm in that same boat too. We're together on that. But looking forward and saying, you know what? I can beat this. There isn't a single one that I can't overcome. But it's not just me overcoming it. Is it just through my own personal strength and my own willpower? That's a recipe for disaster there. But it's me turning to God who wants to give me the grace above and beyond what I'm able to handle. And so he's always going to be there to support me to overcome these temptations as they come along. That's good news. Now, just a little bit more about what's going on inside there. We all have, we call them passions, we call them emotions, we use different language in modern psychology, but within the church we talk about this, we even call them appetites. And not just meaning hunger, but all these desires innate, which are good in and of themselves, that are inside us, that are seeking to be fulfilled. But the problem is, we also know that what God has intended for us isn't simply to fulfill all of our appetites in whatever way we happen to have at our disposition. Because there's right ways to do that and wrong ways to do that. There's disproportionate ways to do that in excess and also in in a deficiency too. And so we have to use our intellect in order to figure out, well, how should I go about doing this? I'm called to love, but I shouldn't just love everybody in any old way. There's certain kinds of love that is only reserved for certain people. Marriage, and there's obvious things that go along with that, and not married, there's other things that don't go along with that. I mean, just to make it obvious. And so we've got these natural inclinations that are pulling us in all kinds of different directions, God-given inclinations, and we're a little bit off balance, and all of a sudden we start misfiring. And that's this thing coming out from the inside that Jesus is talking about. And that's why he's also saying, watch and pray, be vigilant. Our moral life isn't just simply this burden that the church has kind of put on us. Say, okay, now you're going to be good. And it's like some kind of puritanical, I don't know, it's like an esoteric kind of like masochistic, just to beat ourselves up and not have any enjoyment. And it's just a big, big joy kill. You know what's a real joy kill? Sin. Sucks the joy right out of anything.
sucks the peace right out of your life. That's the real joy kill. This is giving you freedom, not to be bound and shackled by sin, not to be hindered and compromised internally by sin, not to be debilitated by it. And all of us sinners, me too, have experienced what that feels like, and it's pretty bad. Dang it, I did it again. Why do I always do that? Watch and pray, watch and pray. God will give you the strength to overcome it. And then as you grab onto that strength and use that, the God-given, to overcome the particular temptation, you are growing in virtue. You're growing in spiritual strength, and that builds on itself, and it can build up such that things that used to be a real struggle now start to come along with a little bit more ease. And now I know how to do this. I know how to fight. I know how to beat that, and I've done it before, and God, don't let me backslide. But, and all of a sudden we start growing. And it's not an indifferent part of just some kind of a, I don't know, self-realization kind of thing of just like me being a good person. And no, it really has to do with your relationship with God. It's a relationship thing, our moral life and this moral work that we do. Because God made us and created us, and he's loving us, and he's calling us to a more beautiful, deeper relationship with him and with each other. And sin's the thing that's always getting in the way. And so he said, okay, here, try this. Work on this, focus it here. Let me give you some grace and support. And I know this one's bigger than you, so I'm gonna really help you on this one. He's been doing this since the beginning of time with Adam and Eve. Here, you guys messed up pretty bad. Here, let me give you some clothes. You're gonna need them now. Very first thing he does, he seeks to take care of them, protect their dignity, help them restore their dignity. Let me help you cover up. You're going to need this. And throughout the history of salvation, through in the Old Testament, what we heard in the first reading there, it's Moses recapping some of the things that God's done for them. He's given them the Ten Commandments. Well, the Ten Commandments, isn't that like pretty basic stuff? Thou shalt not kill. Don't steal. Honor your father and mother. Well, you know what? We're so stubborn and so thick-headed sometimes, we need it that explicit and that clear to remind us, to form our conscience in our minds, to help it trickle down here. If it's so obvious, I mean, it kind of is, but if it's so obvious, why does it need to be stated clearly? 10 of them right there. There they are. It's because that's how we're kind of messed up. We need those kinds of reminders, and not just the Ten Commandments, but other things. And the church continues that mission today of forming, guiding, and say, okay, this is the Ten Commandments, and this is how it applies in the here and now with these new situations that have never been around before in the history of humanity because of technology, because of other situations. And for all of us, this is our first rodeo in life, and so we're all trying to learn it as we go along here. What does this mean for me? There's all kinds of moral guidance. The Catechism has an entire section just on the moral life, and it takes the Ten Commandments and unpacks them. Because there's a lot of thou shalt not kill that doesn't involve someone losing their life. There's a lot of things just shy of that. Now, this is all kind of like, this all might sound like a little heavy and a bit of a beatdown, but let me just restate again. This is a path to spiritual joy. As our life, as we fight the moral life in this area and start having some wins and start growing closer to our Lord, it's like our heart expands. We feel greater peace. Our relationships with God improves. Our relationship with each other improves. It's all wins. It's wins all around as we lean into this. So watch and pray. Because at any given moment, there's an opportunity in order to grow. We don't know when it's going to come. Sometimes God gives us a nice break for a while. Like we might go a week, 2 weeks, even a month, sometimes even longer in our life. We're just really not challenged a whole lot morally speaking. There's not a whole lot of junk thrown at us temptation-wise. And then all of a sudden, take two more steps further and some situational thing changes, now we're bombarded. And it's like, well, what's going on? I thought I was doing well. No, it's okay. God's going to be there. He's going to strengthen you. He's going to help you through this, because now it's fight time. Because he knows you're ready for it now. He's been building you up through this time, giving you the rest you need so as to now dig back in and get back to work. Because we all have a long way to go before we're capable of loving in the way they love in heaven. But that's where he wants us. And he wants to get us there, and he's determined to do that, and he will always give you the grace you need to do that. So your takeaway assignment, you can take one or two things. Crack open the catechism, you can find it online, that section on the Ten Commandments, the moral life, and just allow some of that to soak in. And there's some great quotes in there from John Paul II, from other saints, about what happens when we really start leaning into this part of our relationship with God. The other one, if you like, is to read the first letter of St. James, which was the second reading. That we just, it's just a couple chapters long. You could probably read it in about 20 minutes. And it's a moral exhortation. He's like, tell them, okay, guys, do this, stop doing that, stop doing it. And it's like, but he gets into concrete situations about the kinds of things that trip us up. And so it can be a great reminder. You'll read it and say, well, yeah, I knew that. Yeah, we all know that at some level, but how often? No, but take it to heart and say, Lord, help, I want to work on this. Lord, help me. It's easy to spot sin in everybody else, and sometimes it's a little harder to spot it in ourselves. Actually, it's always harder to spot in ourselves because we're always giving ourselves excuses. But St. John calls a spade, and so he's maybe pretty New Yorker in that sense. So listen to him. So two assignments, catechism on moral life, or St. James, one of those two. But keep up the fight. There are crosses all around this church. There's a big one there. There's another one there. There's little ones all over the top of the columns. We came in processing one right in the front. We're going to walk out of here with one right in front of us processing out. It's a reminder, not just of Jesus' sacrifice, but the kind of fight and sacrifice that we have to make. It's suffering. It's work. It's toil. That's why we call it the cross. It's for each of us. And you can do it. And you can beat the crap that the devil puts in front of you. But you got to be willing to accept the grace as it comes from God.